Derek Warren here with Delane Donaldson once again. Thanks for joining me today.
Absolutely. My privilege to be up here with you.
Yeah, and you've got another topic. I haven't heard anything about this person before. It didn't really ring a bell as far as learning about it during history class. Ada Kepley, correct?
She is one of those hidden people that Effingham ought to advertise an awful lot because she was a nationally known figure and just an interesting figure. She was a temperance leader, and so there were a lot of people in this area who hated her very desperately, and there were a lot of situations that she found herself in that were very uncomfortable in terms of threats to her.
Oh, boy.
But she was involved in a whole lot of different kinds of things, very, very, very interested in things that related to protecting people from violent behavior, especially within family relationships and things of that sort. And so on. So if you come into the museum and you go to Gallery 3, which is used to be like a traffic court area there, you'll see a wall that is devoted to Ada Kepley and some other things that are down apart from the wall that are devoted to Ada Kepley. And if you go across the hall from that location, you'll find more materials that are devoted to Ada Kepley. And in Gallery 3, up on the wall, there is kind of a would be like a brief resume of her. If she was filling out, you know, a job application, what would she put down? Okay, so the things that you would see there would be the fact that she was an attorney.
Okay.
Very interesting. And this is what makes her of worldwide significance in reality. And the like is because she was the very first woman in the world to get a degree from a law school.
Oh, that's cool.
Just an amazing thing. And it was stunning for that time period, but it is something that was through the years built upon by the women's movement. She was a suffragette. She was very, very much interested in making sure that women had the right to vote. She was an individual who got a PhD. She was an ordained minister. She was fluent in German as well as English, so in a German-speaking county, as Effingham County was at one time, then that was a very valuable asset that she had, personal asset. She was a very outspoken person, very, very, very talented in terms of just being able to have the right words to say. Nothing right. seemed to frighten this woman.
Now, what time period was this?
Okay, let's just go backward then to the beginning of her life. She was born in 1847.
Okay.
And she wasn't born here. She was born in Ohio, and the family spent the early days of her life in Ohio. And then they moved to the St. Louis area and then did not come to the Effingham area until we get into the 1860s. When we see her in terms of our space here with her, it was in the 1860s and beyond that.
Around teenage years then for her.
Yeah. So, she got married when she was 20, and she married a lawyer here in Effingham. And so she was a very, very talented writer. So I forgot to list that there, one of the talents that we have there. She wrote poetry. And she had that poetry was published in newspapers all across America.
Oh, that's cool.
She wrote sheet music. The lyrics, you know, for sheet music.
Wow.
And then local people would help in terms of putting the music to that all.
Right.
But she was the lyricist then, you know, for that. Very, very patriotic woman. She was the biggest promoter, I think, that Effingham probably has ever had, in terms of trying to attract businesses to Effingham.
Well, multi-talented, too.
Oh, she was. And she had a husband who encouraged her in everything that she did.
Cool.
You know, and so when they were trying to encourage people to come to Effingham and establish businesses here, they put two big billboards along the place where the railroads crossed here in Effingham and talked about the advantages of Effingham. And the things that they advertised were things like it's only X number of miles to the Panama Canal, you know,
right.
and then to the big cities, you know, that we're only this far from St. Louis, we're only this far from Chicago, we're only this far from Indianapolis. To try to encourage people to settle here and to establish businesses here. This was a husband-wife team that was just a remarkable team in everything that they did. Now, if we were to look at her then, and we go back to her when she got married, so she was only 20, and her husband was a lawyer, And so what he decided, well, what she decided, I should say, there's no he or she decision-making because they're a team, but they talked it over. She clerked for him in the law office. And then he said, you are so good at this. He said, you need to become an attorney. Well, it was against the law for women to be attorneys.
Yeah.
Okay? But she enrolled in a law school in Chicago, and she said it really hurt her to leave her husband. This is now 1869 when she does that. So she's a young married person at this particular point. So she goes to Chicago, and she goes to what was called the Old University of Chicago. That's not the current University of Chicago. But the old University of Chicago, which evolved into Northwestern.
Okay.
And so if you go to the alumni list of Northwestern University today, you'll find Ada Kepley listed there.
All right.
Because she was that was her school. And then after she had gotten her degree, which was, again, mind-blowing, world-blowing kind of situation because nobody had heard of a woman getting a law degree before.
Right, yeah.
Now, the way that lawyers typically got their ability to be lawyers was the fact that they studied under another lawyer. So she's not the first woman lawyer, okay, but the first one to get a degree.
Okay.
So she was professionally trained by a series of professors there at the old University of Chicago. Okay. Well, when she went, after she had her degree, and the whole class then went to the appropriate authorities in Chicago to say we want our law licenses now to practice, she was denied because the person who was issuing those licenses said it's against the law for women to be lawyers. Now,
how do they work around this?
Well, okay, so these are very, very talented people, okay, that we're dealing with here. So when she came back to Effingham then, the local circuit judge, a man named Decius, D-E-C-I-U-S, Decius, Judge Decius,
okay,
said, I will give you a license to practice in Effingham County.
Oh, exclusive and you, to Effingham
you,
County.
You can practice Effingham County because that's all the authority he had. So you can practice in Effingham County, and as you practice in Effingham County, then there's not going to be any issue about whether or not this is legal because I've granted you that permission.
Okay.
But the state of Illinois said to her, if you practice and you charge a fee, for every dollar that you charge as a legal fee, we will fine you $3.
Wow.
So that was, be quiet, don't say anything, don't be visible, you know.
Yeah.
And so it was to try to really put the clamps on her. But she was active in a whole lot of other things there. And so the law was to her, as people look at her, I think, from this distance in time, that she wanted to look at those things where she could say, okay, we've got a social problem that exists here, and laws could help with this. And so right. We'll go after those things that are social issues, and we will change the laws. So her husband drafted a bill and he and she presented that bill to the local representative for this part of Illinois, who introduced it into the state legislature in Illinois,
okay,
granting women the right to be professionals, such as attorneys. Okay, and so that then bill, and when Decius made his statement about granting her the license to practice here, he said the spirit of the times is such that it's time for us to change our laws.
Right.
Okay.
Everybody was behind it.
Yeah. There's a support that is out there, and so then when the law had been written and then came into effect, it was written in something that would sound like it was more like a 20th century kind of thing than it would have been back in the 19th century. But it was there shall not be discrimination on the basis of gender. As a consequence of that, this opened up a whole lot of things, especially the law field, though. And so then she began to go out, and she began to deal with the social issues of the time period. Now, one of the things that she saw as a very, very important social issue was family violence. And one of the things that she saw was that very often men would get drunk on Saturday night, and they come home and beat up their wife or beat up, and sometimes the kids would get involved in, helping the mom. And so she saw a lot of abuse that was taking place in families. So she saw the root problem as being the alcohol abuse that was taking place. And so she went after that and became very, very important in in the temperance movement, and nationally she was known in that regard. A woman named Emma Willer was the person who was the national leader, state leader here that was very, very important. And she and Ada became very, very close friends.
Now, this was getting close to the Prohibition movement too, right?
Okay, that all feeds into that, yeah. Okay. So the temperance movement in America started back in the 1820s, actually. So it took 100 years for it to lead up to Prohibition. Okay. And so this is just one phase of it. And women became the mainstays here. So when she was involved with the temperance movement in Effingham, what she did was that she and other women would go into saloons here in Effingham, and there was an abundance of them at one time. And when she and the other ladies would go into the saloons, then they would just kind of try to stop the business inside the saloon, which would lead to her arrest or threats to her physical well-being. Now, and so she was slapped around a lot of times inside the saloons by the men who were in the saloons, or the wives of the saloon keepers did the same.
Wow.
So there was a saloon that was just about a block and a half away from where we are right now on Banker Street. And when she went into that saloon, the wife of the saloon keeper decided on one occasion, this is in the 1880s now we're talking about, that she because the law office for the Kepleys was right across the street from that. Uh-huh. And so if you know where the Kepley Monument is on Banker Street here, just about a block and a half away from us, on the Washington Savings Bank parking lot area there.
Okay
that monument that's there. The Kepley Building is right there, right next to it. And so the wife and the daughter of the saloon keeper who had the saloon right across the street there also, okay, they met Ada out in the middle of the street one day here on Banker Street, and they slapped her and they beat on her, and she took a lot of abuse. But she was tough. And so
she expected it, too.
She knew that was going to happen. Okay, now, on another occasion, I should interject another characteristic she had. She loved animals. I loved dogs and cats.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was said that there could be no stray dog or cat in Effingham that Ada Kepley did not take in, was willing to take in. And so she had an abundance of pets, and tried to make sure that people were not abusing their animals. So whenever she went out to speak, and she did a lot of public speaking, temperance movement was really strong here in Effingham County. And so she would do a lot of public speaking. And when she went out and did a lot of public speaking, she usually had a dog or two with her.
Okay.
Okay, now, she and her husband had been out one evening. And when they came back home, and they had an apartment on Banker Street up above where their law offices were. And so when she came back home one evening, he was putting the horse and carriage away. She went into the apartment area, or the I guess you'd call that, it's not a house, okay, so they're living quarters, and so she went into that, and the dog that was with her, she said, just froze, and she knew something was wrong. And so when that happened, then all of a sudden a man stepped out from behind a curtain. He had a pistol and he had a rubber hose. Now, it was later described as hoses that would be attached to beer kegs to serve people within a saloon. And so the man then took a shot at her, hoping to kill her. And he missed, and he hit the dog that was with her in the paw. It didn't kill the dog, but it grazed the dog in the paw. And then he shoved her. He took this rubber hose that he had and began to strike her violently with the rubber hose. Then he ran out of the building. So this was an attempted assassination, in other words, on her as a temperance leader, which oftentimes was a threat to a lot of temperance people.
Now, was it a single-shot pistol or something?
Well, I'm not really certain what kind of pistol it was. But yeah, he just took one shot, and then he was out of there.
Okay.
Now, he eventually was tracked down, and he was found. This is not immediately, but eventually people found out who he was. And it was found out that he was the son of the saloon keeper who was across the street there.
Of course.
Yeah. And his dad, he said, had said, I wish somebody'd shoot her. And he took that literally. The dad didn't necessarily mean it literally, but the son took it literally, and so he decided he would carry out that particular task.
Shows that words do have consequences.
They do, indeed, yes. So, this is a parental rule. Be careful what you say around your kid,
Yeah, right, exactly. You
know, because it might be taken an entirely different way than what you really intended for it to be. But anyhow, she was this very, very important temperance leader. But she did, all these other kinds of things with family violence, and she tried to get laws that would protect women and children from violent spouses and the like. She was an individual who was very concerned. This really surprised me when I found this little document about that she had produced to pass around Effingham about child trafficking. You know, you hear a lot about that right now. And I thought that was pretty much a phenomenon of our time, but no. She was writing about this in 1900 or early 1900s, in which she said there's this kind of thing that's taking place, and she said society is just closing its eyes to the problem, and so it was, let's wake up and let's do something to protect these children who are out here who are being trafficked in our society. So she was a person who really was a moral crusader. The WCTU, Women's Christian Temperance Union, was the main force of women being organized to try to make society a more moral place. And so in her leadership there, and she was involved those national leaders, Susan B. Anthony came to Effingham, as a for instance, and she visited with Ada Kepley here. That happened. And there are other kinds of things like that were very, very important. Now, in her book, and she wrote books, she had a book called Farm Philosopher. And in that Farm Philosopher book, she wrote about, I went around the world four times. Now, she didn't mean that literally. She said, I did not travel, physically there. She said, but my name went around the world four different times, okay? In the, she called it the civilized world, as wherever they had newspapers, and her name was in the newspaper. And so those were occasions where she was very much involved in social crusades. Of course, the very first time she said that happened was when she got that law degree, and that story went around the world. And people said, wait a minute, why don't our universities grant these kind of degrees, to the women and so on? And so so she said that was the first time that went around the world. And she said, and then she said that she was involved in a lot of different kinds of activities that, let me just refer to my notes here to keep everything straight in my head. But she said that the second time was when she was fighting against obscene literature. She said she noticed that occasionally in Effingham there would be posters up on telephone or on poles that were outside of stores and so on that oftentimes would have pictures on them of females in very scanty attire. And so she said, I thought this is just viewing women as sex objects. I don't want that to happen, And so she tore down the posters. That got her arrested. Yeah. Her husband was her defense lawyer, of course, all the time. But she then fought for trying to deal with those kinds of settings where if someone was doing something that was pornographic, and the definition of pornographic was a pretty tight definition or very loose definition, rather, of pornography. But she said especially she went after a magazine called the Police Gazette because she said it just kind of reveled in printing sensational stories that oftentimes had overtones that were, were making women just sex objects rather than being considered for human beings, and the like. And so she then made her complaints, and boom, she was able to get that. Her husband was on the school school board or the school trustees of Effingham County, and he held that position consistently for several years. Well, one time people said, well, why don't we do something to kind of liven up our school elections? And so some of Henry Kepley, that was her husband, Henry's friend, said, why don't we run your wife as a trustee? Why doesn't she run as a trustee? Women hadn't been elected to that position. And so why doesn't she run for trustee and we'll get out a vote for her? And maybe, Henry, she'll beat you. And it was kind of, right, I've been on the board for a long time. Well, she won the election. Cool. And she said again, it went around the world, she said, because of the fact that this was a very noteworthy kind of situation where people could look at all of this and they would see the way in which the world was changing and that a woman, in fact, could be elected to these positions. She was on the ballot of the Prohibition Party, for instance, running for the Attorney General of the state of Illinois. She didn't get elected. Because there was prejudice against electing a woman to that position. But she was there, and she was leading the way for all of that kind of thing. Then she said the fourth time that her name got known around the world was when the assassination attempt was taken on her life. And so all around the world, newspapers printed the story about how this guy was in the house and how he tried to shoot her, and then he beat her with this hose of some sort. And so she said, my name has been there. She said, I've not been able to do the travel myself. She said, but my name has traveled four times around the world.
Yeah,
you know?
Word gets out.
Yeah, you know, and so it was, she's a very interesting figure. And so what we try to do up there at the museum is to make people aware of the fact that here was a woman who had national standing. She had national recognition. She was an individual who, whenever the public thought of her, either loved her or they hated her. There was no middle ground. Now, she, in her interest, was to a large degree devoted to children. And as she did that, she and her husband purchased an old church building, a vacated church building that was over on 4th Street. Okay. Back in that time, in the Civil War era, there was what was called the Methodist Episcopal Church South. That is, a lot of the large denominations divided over the issue of states' rights. Now, this was not a slave issue, but a states' rights issue. And so there was a wing of the Methodist Church called ME Church South that was a states' rights church, and there was a regular Methodist Church. So there was a ME, there was not just this one in Effingham, but there were others out in the countryside here. But after the Civil War was over, then the Methodist Church got back together as a solid unit. There was no division like that anymore. And so their churches and buildings tended to be vacated. And so they bought this church building, the Kepleys did, and they bought the church building, and they said, we will have that open to the public, because it had a platform where if you wanted to have some kind of presentation, she said, for churches, if they want to have Christmas pageants, they can have them here in our building. It was a nice building.
Yeah.
And so we'll open it up. And to anyone who has more of a crusading spirit, so that is that women's rights movements could take place there. They were getting the right to vote for women. Temperance movements could, people could come in there and they could speak there. And all of that was taking place. And so they especially, she said, want to deal with the youth. And so she said, I will have a youth program there. And she organized what was called the Band of Hope, which was a youth band. It would be like a school band type thing.
Okay.
And so then she would have those kids gather there, and they would have evenings together. It was just like a large church youth group is what it amounted to.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So, they'd come together and they would have their activities there centered around the church, and they would march in parades, and they would do a whole lot of things like that. Now, she would also take those kids when she went out to speak for temperance engagements. And so she would oftentimes use those kids, and we got that in our building over here.
Cool.
That was from that youth group. And so we have a number of things that are related to Ada. She made large stones to put on wells that were public wells, where people would come and dip the buckets down, and this before running water, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so they dip their buckets down into the deep wells. And so she made these large stones to put up on those. And it was a Christian advertisement: he who thirsteth, let him drink of the water of life, that kind of a Bible verse on top of that. And then those would cover those to protect them from things getting into the water supply and so on. So she was active in so many ways and left a very, very deep footprint. And yet, through the years, she lost that influence. And so, in the present, very, very few people really know her to any degree at all. But again, people loved her or they hated her, and one or the other. And so I think that battle just kind of brought her a lack of fame that she really, really deserves.
A polarizing character.
It was. Yeah, she was that is for sure.
Yeah, well, you mentioned she was doing all this stuff, fighting for women's rights. This was before they had the right to vote as well.
Yep.
They didn't get that till many decades later.
Yep. Yeah, she died in 1925, and when she died, by that time she was very happy because she had seen prohibition. You know, that was her goal. And she had seen women have the right to vote. And she said that, you know, she had lived through that, and that was very, very deeply pleasing to her.
Yeah, definitely. I imagine that all the hard work paid off for her.
Yeah, so. Yeah. She looked at that, and you know, it was, you know, this is what we were fighting for. There were lots of books that were written in the early part of the 20th century which mention Ada Kepley as one of those 100 leaders across America.
Yeah.
You know, 100 women who, let me think, the Willard book was 100 women of the nation, I think.
Most influential.
Yeah, and that's what they were picked on, the basis of the influence that they had. And so here is this woman who ranked in the top 100 women leaders in America at one time, and yet she got lost to history.
Yeah, lost in the obscurity of all the things that have happened throughout history.
Right, right.
Well, it's amazing to hear about it. That's a local leader from back in that time period, and again, just fell through the cracks.
And you know, there's a very sad ending to her life, and that is that after her husband died, she thought that she could take care of herself. She thought she wrote a lot, and she thought her writings would carry her on, and she thought her book, you know, that people would buy the book, and the like. And she was flat broke, and so her last year was spent at St. Anthony Hospital. St. Anthony Hospital at one time, the old hospital, had a floor or section of a floor that was devoted to indigent people, and so she was part of that. Now, those were usually elderly people who just didn't have the funds anymore, and so when she died, she was that. There's no fancy gravestone or anything of that sort. There's just a simple little gravestone there, and the people of that time period frequently talked about the fact someday we'll have a statue, you know, for her, because she was this very, very important national and even international figure.
Yeah, she's got a monument right out here still, I believe. But
yeah.
Beyond that, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a little unfortunate, but she left her mark on history.
She did, indeed.
People that know that she did a great job.
Yeah.